So I'm Kelly, I'm a fellow at the European Decentralization Institute, which is an independent think tank for the decentralized economy. And this talk is about a layer of digital infrastructure that rarely appears in European digital policy. I know that sovereignty, digital sovereignty, is a hot topic today, and for good reason. That's a good thing. But especially on the EU level, the focus usually stays on things like cloud, AI, semiconductors, big US tech platforms, and software. Because these are the things that institutions already know how to deal with, right? They fit into existing legal categories and they map cleanly onto procurement frameworks. But what tends to be invisible is the protocol layer that runs beneath everything. And yet this is the layer that determines how systems communicate, how they remain inoperable, and how they evolve over time. It's the coordination infrastructure that makes everything else function. Public institutions increasingly depend on open protocols, sometimes at very large scale, which we'll see in a minute, while the governance of these protocols remains largely absent from strategy, procurement, and long-term planning. The dependencies already exist, but the understanding of protocol governance, how the protocol evolves, often does not. And this talk is about exactly that blind spot. But before I continue, let me be very explicit what I will not argue for. I'm not here, of course, to advocate for regulating protocols. I'm not here even to argue that governments should enter protocol governance in all cases. The goal is much more basic and much more necessary. It is to make the protocol layer legible so that institutions and technical communities share an understanding of what it means to be dependent on these systems over time. So I think it's helpful to first start with how European digital policy tends to look at technology. First, of course, there is the infrastructure, the chips, data centers, the networks, cloud regions, the underlying hardware and functions that can be owned, geographically located, and audited. Second, of course, something we're very familiar with in Brussels, regulation, the legal instruments that govern digital infrastructure and services. And most of the aforementioned infrastructure items, they are already regulated through data protection rules, the AI Act, platform obligations, cybersecurity frameworks, and so on. And of course, the institutions, the formal authorities, the agencies, funding programs, and governance bodies with budget, mandates, and formal authority to implement policy. Now, open protocols, by contrast, are, of course, they're borderless, they're non-ownable, and they're maintained by loose global communities. They determine how systems inoperate, but they do so without ownership, without jurisdiction, and without institutional control. And that's a good thing, of course, but as a result, they sit outside the field of vision of most policy frameworks. In practice, this means that protocols are often treated as technical background conditions, something that is almost assumed to be stable, neutral, and external to governance. That assumption, of course, as most of you here will know, is wrong. Protocols are not static. They are continuously modified through governance processes, proposal mechanism, consensus norms, backwards compatibility decisions, and informal power that accrues over time. These processes determine what the protocol allows, what it forbids, and what kinds of behavior are allowed to build on top of it. In other words, protocols make rules. They just do so without being recognized as rulemaking systems by law or policy. And this creates a structural blind spot. Digital policy already routinely produces dependencies on open protocols, but without identifying them explicitly, without funding the work that keeps them scalable, without assessing how their evolution might react with interact with regulatory goals. And I think the distinction becomes even more obvious when you look at the procurement processes. Now, when an institution adopts a software, it of course does so through a contract. There is a vendor, a liability regime, a defined update path. Governance is externalized. On the contrast, when an institution adopts an open protocol, even though they might not be fully aware of it, none of that exists. the institution enters an existing coordination system whose evolution is shaped by participation, not authority. There is no counterparty to contract with and no mechanism to align change with public objectives. Protocol governance is simply how those coordination systems change over time. Who can propose changes? How do proposals gain adoption? And what constrains a well-funded actor from steering the system when there's no formal veto, no regulator, or no enforceable obligation? From within the protocol communities, this is all super obvious, right? But from a legal and policy perspective, it is not. What is visible is the repository, the documentation, and so on. What is not visible is decision thresholds, the power dynamics, and the coordination costs that shape future behavior. That opacity makes it quite difficult for institutions to assess in what ways they are dependent on open protocols, because institutions are not only relying on how a protocol behaves today, but also how it might change in the future. And it is really a big mismatch with existing policy and procurement frameworks, because policy tools and procurement frameworks usually assume at least one of three things. First, a regulatable subject, a contractual counterparty, or an accountable entity. But Ethereum has no central governance body. Matrix has no vendor relationship. They evolve through distributed coordination, proposals, discussions, and voluntary adoption. None of the usual levers apply, and that makes it very complicated for policymakers. But I would argue that in network systems, sovereignty does not come from formal ownership or formal control. It comes from understanding how rule changes occur, who participates in them, and where influence actually sits. Open protocols already structure behavior at scale. Policy simply doesn't see that yet. And this, I would argue, is a massive gap that we should address. But what exactly is the issue here? Why does it matter that protocol governance is a blind spot in digital policy? The problem is, of course, not that open protocols lack governance. Most of them are governed carefully and competently. The problem is that digital policy increasingly, whether they're aware or not, creates dependencies on protocols without accounting for their governance. Through standard references, interoperability mandates, and funding programs and long-term compliance requirements, policy choices already determine which protocols institutions come to rely on. But the governance of these protocols remain largely outside institutional awareness, though there are, of course, some examples. When governance is invisible, dependencies do not disappear. They simply move downstream into procurement decisions, operational risk, and incident responses. When institutions are left managing the consequences they did not anticipate and cannot easily influence, and this creates three structural risks. First of all, interoperability becomes fragile. Public deployments assume long-term capability, but of course protocols evolve. Specifications change, methods get depreciated. Decisions made today can surface later as breakage and are far away from the original discussion. There is no contract enforcing compatibility. Governments are users of the protocol, not parties to its governance usually. Unlike traditional interoperability mandates, which assume bilateral or multilateral agreements between accountable parties. So when a breaking change happens and an institution relies on open protocols, they have to absorb the risk. Second, and I think this is an important one, exit options become costly. When protocol evolution diverges from institutional constraints, the options become very narrow, because forking a protocol deployed at scale is very expensive, it's operationally risky, and politically difficult. You inherit the full maintenance burden and slowly lose alignment with the wider ecosystem, which gives you network benefits. Abandoning the protocol also often means falling back to vendor-centric alternatives, recreating the very dependencies that sovereignty strategies are meant to avoid. There's no one to negotiate with when you are adopting an open protocol. Governance is distributed by design. You either participate in shaping it or you accept what the community decides. And finally, change arrives at an operational surprise. When a protocol changes through open coordinations, if institutions do not track these processes, governance decisions surface as urgent incidents instead of predictable life cycle maintenance work. So security fixes, specification protocols, protocol upgrades, of course, these are not failures of a protocol. They are completely normal, but usually there is no institutional capacity to track these. So what does that look like in practice? I want to use a Matrix protocol as an example, because Matrix is already used for governance communications at a very large scale. Franz Tichep serves hundreds of thousands of civil servants on a daily basis. And then in Germany, you have BMW Messenger, which serves over 100,000 users and is used in the Bundeswehr and parts of public administration. And TI Messenger, the German healthcare sector, is a user, and over 150,000 healthcare organizations, large and small, rely on it. So these deployments, they work very well, right? They scale. And adoption of the Matrix protocol is increasing, accelerating. I know Sweden, the Netherlands, and the European Commission, they all have Matrix deployments in process. And this is mainly driven by the EU's push for digital sovereignty, but also new interoperability mandates. But here is where the dependency looks like operationally. When Matrix addresses a security vulnerability through a coordinated release, server operators must decide whether to upgrade immediately or run a version with a known issue. Of course, the decision is not made in a vacuum. The timing, scope, and mitigation are shaped upstream through Matrix governance, through the MSC discussions, embargo coordination, and release planning. But if your institution is not tracking these, you do not learn about them when decisions are being debated. You learn when the security advisory becomes public. And at that point, the choice is no longer strategic. It's reactive. You have to respond almost immediately, and you have to choose between operational risk or compatibility risk. The same dynamic applies, of course, to room version upgrades. Matrix has introduced multiple room versions to improve security and federation behavior. If a critical coordination room upgrades and your deployment will not update clients, users can lose access, and decisions about when a room version are introduced, how backwards compatibility is handled, and what migration path exists are all made through the official governance process of Matrix. So it's very important to track this. And this is not something hypothetical, because since France has adopted Matrix, for example, there was the authenticated media that was rolled out across the Matrix network in 2024. And every client and bridge had to adapt. So governance decisions in the protocol directly translated into operational work for institutional deployments. And now here's the fragility. These deployments, they succeed because a small number of individuals understood both the protocol governance and the institutional deployment. So people inside DINAM, for example, in France, and engineers at Gematik in Germany, these people are very capable of following the governance. And I think in the case of Matrix, since October, they have actually, in the case of TCHEP, they have actually joined the Matrix Foundation in October, so quite recently. So Matrix is France is doing quite well there. But the knowledge is highly concentrated in a few people, does not scale automatically, and when those individuals move on, there is a risk that the institutional understanding disappears with them. So I think Europe does definitely not lack the technical capacity to rely on open protocols, but they do lack a systematic institutional capacity, and that is a risk. So they need the capacity to monitor governance processes and security advisories, the capacity to plan upgrades as part of regular lifecycle management, not as an incident response, and the capacity to understand how specification changes affect operational continuity before they become breakage or big failures. Without that capacity, institutions depend on protocol governance that they do not track and discover the consequences only when it's almost too late. And of course, Matrix is not an exception here. This goes for any open protocol used in live deployments at scale by institutions, from identity to messaging, from payments to data exchange, right? They can all create the same dependence on protocol governance indirectly once institutions adopt something that uses that open protocol at scale. Now, there is some very good news. There is an opportunity to address the challenges I just mentioned. As we speak, the European Commission is preparing its open source digital ecosystems strategy. In fact, the public consultation is closing this Tuesday, so if you want to get your comments in, there's still some time. And the ambition of the European Commission is very well placed. It is to support the full open source life cycle, right, from deployment to market uptake, mainly across cloud, AI, and digital commons. And the European Commission also has correctly identified that a significant share of value created by European open source flows outside Europe. Of course, this is an important diagnosis, and I'm sure the Commission will look at all the public consultation inputs. But in my view, it remains incomplete unless the strategy also addresses what happens once open technologies are deployed at scale. If the open digital ecosystem strategy only focuses on supply side measures, for example, funding projects, encouraging adoption and building markets, it will continue to underestimate a central source of digital dependency. Many public deployments rely on protocols whose evolution Europe does not yet track, resource, or plan for. And to address this gap, I argue that there should be four pillars in this new strategy. First, require protocol governance assessment in public procurement. Second, recognize protocol stewardship as critical to digital infrastructure, and of course, fund it accordingly and sustainably. Third, build institutional capacity to track and plan for protocol evolution. And fourth, align procurement incentives with upstream contribution. Now, we'll go through them quickly. So, as I said, first, the strategy should require protocol governance assessment in public procurement, and I think this is one of the biggest blind spots we have right now, because today institutions routinely make strategic procurement decisions based on the assumption that protocols are technically stable, but in reality, of course, they are not. And this is a huge issue because public tenders specify the use of open protocols sometimes, but they do not include the need to assess the protocol itself, only the supplier. So I think when you look at public procurement, it should include an understanding of where protocol decisions are made, how changes proposed and adopted, and how backwards compatibility is managed, and how breaking changes can surface. The objective is not to influence governance outcomes, of course, but to make protocol risk visible. Second, the strategy should recognize protocol stewardship as digital infrastructure and fund it, because, of course, protocols require often invisible work, maintaining specifications, reviewing proposed changes, and so on. But this work is rarely funded through market mechanisms and is systematically missed by project-based funding. And when it is under-resourced, fragility accumulates. I think here the great example is the German Sovereign Tech Fund, which demonstrates that its problem can be addressed without exercising control. Since 2020, it has invested more than 23 million in over 60 open source components, and I think the open digital eco strategy should apply this logic as at European level. Third, the strategy should build institutional capacity to track and plan for protocol evolution. Public agencies need practical literacy in how protocol changes happens, knowing where the discussions take place, which forums and repositories carry authority, how timelines are set, etc. Without this capacity, institutions will remain only reactive and repeatedly surprised by upstream governance decisions. And I think this is already quite visible and at risk in regulated deployments. For example, under the EID DUS2, member states are required to roll out digital identity wallets at population scale by late 2026. And these wallets depend on internationally developed identity and credential specifications that continue to evolve. And if European wallet implementations do not actively track and plan for this evolution, cross-border interoperability might fail because member states will be implementing different assumptions based on the same underlying standards. And finally, the strategies should align procurement incentives with upstream contribution. For now, public procurement rewards systems integrators who resell or deploy protocol-based systems, while the maintainers usually do not benefit from this procurement value. This is risky because vendors that actively contribute to protocol specifications and so on, they are far better positioned to anticipate change and fix issues quickly while keeping deployments aligned with upstream evolution. The strategy should therefore support procurement models that recognize contribution as a sort of resilience signal. And I think proposals from initiatives such as Eurostack already point in this direction to make contribution an explicit procurement criterion point. This is not only just about an ideological preference for open source, but also about sound risk management. And taken together, this would really help taking the strategy from a real framework to supporting open protocols. So, of course, the first responsibility lies with institutions to track and account for protocol governance. But then there's the natural question, is there anything that protocol communities can do to help the dependencies easier to understand? Not to change how governance works, of course, but to reduce misunderstanding. Now, I know some of you are thinking, you know, already document your governance. Why is it my problem that institutions don't know how open source works? And I think it's a fair question, but it matters because when institutions don't understand your governance and something breaks, they tend to not absorb the risk quietly. They write regulations and they could really endanger even the developers of the open protocol. We've seen that before. So Matrix documented governance very early and clearly. So when governments like France and Germany adopted it at scale, it helped them understand what they were depending on. So here are some practical tips you could do. Make sure that government's documentation is easy to understand because usually it's written for contributors, of course, and not for dependents. If a ministry official asks, how does a protocol make decisions? Is there one document or a repository that is very clear that you could point them to, or do they kind of have to reverse engineer everything? If you're inclined to formalize something like this, you should think about covering decision venues, proposal lifecycle, participation norms, safeguards, and upgrade expectations, for example. And it could be just even a single well-written page that could provide significant defensive value. I think you can look here at Apache Linux Foundation products, Foundation projects, and Matrix as good examples. And second, be clear about the on-ramps for participation without, of course, promising influence. So it means being explicit about which calls are open and relevant, what participation looks like without disturbing governance. And importantly, and this is something that protocol communities are often not explicit about, what does participation not confirm? So being very explicit that participation does not mean the ability to influence or guaranteed response to feedback. But when governance is legible to institutions, institutions make better procurement decisions, unrealistic expectations are avoided, and communities are also less likely to be pulled into very bad regulatory or legal dynamics. So it allows institutions to depend on you responsibly without you having to constantly explain or mediate. So finally, in conclusion, protocols already underpin many of Europe's digital infrastructure. Digital sovereignty does not mean controlling open protocols, but it means accounting for their governance through stewardship, through clarity, and through institutional literacy. For policymakers and institutional adopters, this means naming protocol dependencies, planning for their evolution, and funding the work that keeps them reliable over time. For developers, it means making your stewardship legible, not to invite control, but to prevent misunderstanding and backlash. And I think if we can get this right, then Europe does not need to choose between sovereignty and openness, because, of course, I think many in this room here will say that sovereignty depends on open technologies. But if we can strengthen the institutional understanding of the protocol layer, that can strengthen the layer where the sovereignty actually begins. Thank you.
So, would you have time for one short question? So we can have one short question and then we have to go on to the next talk. So just go ahead and then please repeat the question. Can you speak loudly or do you need the microphone?
I hope so.
Yeah. Can you repeat the question?
That's more or less the same. We have already standardization organizations which do all what you say. Why not join a standardization organization instead of finding this out yourself?
Yeah, I was referring mainly to open source protocols. I'm sorry if that wasn't clear, but of course, I think the problems usually do not occur at the technical level where, you know, institutions participate in standardization meetings, but higher up, when the, you know, the commissioner for digital decides something, she also needs some basic awareness of what her decisions might imply. And so I think, yeah, it's more like at the higher political level that these things are not well understood.